Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And if you want to hear the extended version of this episode, please join the Patreon campaign. This week, I'm talking to Andy Tomlinson about the book he co-wrote with Reena Kumarasingham. It's called Between Lives: Past Life Regression, Near-Death Experiences, and the Evolution of Consciousness. Andy is a psychologist, psychotherapist, and certified regression therapist. He is the founder of the International Past Life Regression Academy. He is a founding member of the Spiritual Regression Therapy Association and the Earth Association of Regression Therapy. And he has been the president of the Society of Medical Advance and Research with Regression Therapy. Hi, Andy. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Okay, I'm delighted to be here. So thank you for inviting me, Simon. And I look forward to sharing some of my experiences with everybody who's listening.
So we're going to talk about your book that you wrote with Reena Kumarasingham. The book's called Between Lives: Past Life Regression, Near-Death Experiences, and the Evolution of Consciousness. So what is the overview of the book? How does this all come together?
Well, the overview, or at least the story of how it came about, is that both myself and Reena have published other books about past lives before and between lives. But just around about the COVID times, that's just 4 or 5 years ago, Reena had very bad COVID and had a near-death experience. And when she actually came back from that, it impacted her in a really significant way for the better. She found that she was much more intuitive. She never really had a fear of death before, but it was absolutely zero after this experience. And she became much more focused about the things that she had a soul passion for. She didn't let things get in the way. She just lives in a state of joy and happiness. So it had a really big impact on her. But one of the things that she wondered about, because she's been teaching between life regression, this is where you take people into very deep hypnosis and the soul memories between lives come through. And she's worked with hundreds of people as clients and also trained therapists in this area. And so she's very familiar with it. And she was quite amazed how similar the two were. So we talked about it and we embarked on a small research project and found peer-reviewed near-death experience accounts that had been published in a medical journal, so that it was really from people who are well-established medical doctors or psychiatrists, people like Peter Fenwick, Pim Van Lovell, Bruce Grayson, all really big pioneers in the area. And all of them did questionnaires of the subjects, and the questionnaires checked for certain information. You know, did he see any colours? Did he hear any information? Was there a past life review? And so on. And it turned out with all the training that we've been doing for 20 years in between life regression, that with all the case studies that students are asked to go through, they have to submit 5 case studies to become a professional between life regression therapist. Of those 5 case studies, we ask a whole series of questions which ask for information about each of the stages. And we found that we could map the 5 or the stages of the between life regression, at least the initial ones, because obviously with a near-death experience, you only go so far and then come back. With a between-life regression, you continue all the way through to the next reincarnation. So we compared the early stages of the between-life regression with near-death experience, and we had something like 530 or so between-life regressions compared with about 400 near-death experience accounts that had been done by the pioneers that I mentioned before. And we found a great similarity between them. So this really was a much more scientific way of validating what Rena had experienced in a death experience. But we took it a little bit further, particularly Pim Van Lovell went back 3 and 5 years after the near-death experiences, and with this questionnaire was finding out what permanent changes people were going through. And we were able to compare that with a slightly smaller number of case studies of between-life regression, and found a reasonable similarity between it. There were some significant differences, and things like a lot of people who had near-death experience had lost the fear of death, whereas the between-life regression subjects were pretty much okay the consciousness of our death. So they never actually had that to start with. So there were some differences. And also, a lot of the near-death experience people may be atheists. So it was quite transformational, the experiences that they had, which was totally different than what they were expecting. Whereas with the between-life regression, quite a number of people had a bit of an idea of what they were going to expect from the books they'd read, but it was still substantially different and tailored for their own unique experience. And this was the particular area which we were quite intrigued about, what we call expanded consciousness, which is a consciousness that exists much more significantly on a near-death experience, but to a lesser extent with a between-life regression. And that was the basis of putting the book together, because we, with both of us, are very experienced therapists, and we were of the belief that it was possible to experience these heightened sense of awareness, of expanded consciousness, through exercises and through self-help work, rather than having to wait to have your own near-death experience. So the book that we wrote built up the whole case for reincarnation and consciousness being outside the body and surviving death, and the impact of these extended consciousness and how people are totally different in a much more positive way, and how it's possible to achieve that through some of the suggested exercises we have in the book. So that was the whole idea of the book and how it came about.
Could you tell us basically what happened in her near-death experience?
Well, with her experience, we decided she was quite ill and struggling for breath, and we decided that she would stay at home and not go into hospital. We weren't very confident in the way that hospitals at that time were looking after the people who were suffering from COVID. A lot of them were put on ventilators, which just was actually the worst thing you could actually do. In any event, if she was going to die, Rena preferred to be at home in a setting rather than in some sort of sterile hospital setting. So I was looking after her, and I came down one morning and she said, "I've just had a near-death experience." And what happened for her, it was a little unusual, because normally with a near-death experience, people experience coming out of the body, looking down at the body, traveling, seeing various lights, and then meeting various spirits of light and possibly some sort of current life review. But in her case, it was slightly different because she had five spirits of light who came down and started to work on her. And they were taking away the worst effects of the COVID. They allowed her to experience looking down at the earth. And she saw the whole of earth like a surrounded in like a gray mass. And she said, well, what's this gray mass? And they said, oh, this is the old grid of consciousness. It's what you humans have wrapped yourself around in. And they said, why do humans want to do that? Why do they want to make life so difficult for themselves? And she could see the spiritual perspective of that. So she went through quite a lot of the stages, but it was the meeting of the five spirits of light, some sort of dialogue with them. And then she experienced going out of the body and just being in a completely different state, a state where everything was so peaceful and she was able to be at one with everything. And they said to her, it's your choice. You can either stay here or you can go back. She said, well, I only want to pop back just to leave a note to Andy, just a few to-do lists, and I don't want him to suddenly find my body without a bit of pre-warning. And they said, no, you either go back or you stay. So she chose to come back. And so in her case, she did have a choice. But it's very, very similar to a lot of other accounts of near-death experiences.
So why would you say expanding our consciousness is important at this point in time?
Well, it's really because we're all caught up in this grey mass that Rena was talking about of the old grid of consciousness. And it's based on the beliefs, and it could be the beliefs we have when we start to grow up. And it could be, just to give you a nice little simple example of beliefs, I used to have a difficulty saying, I want. I would say everything else, but not I want. And I discovered that when I was young, my mom and dad used to say, I want, don't get. And it was drilled out of me. And it's when you're working in corporate, it can be quite powerful at times to say, I want, as long as you give a reason to justify it, because it's a very powerful way of being assertive. So I discovered and then eventually was able to train myself to be able to use that if I needed it. But it's like I wasn't aware that I'd been programmed, if you like, by our parents. And the parents hadn't been doing it in a mean way. It's just something that had happened to them and they were just passing it down. And a lot of the beliefs and the views we have all come through from childhood events or events that happen in life. As a therapist, I have a lot of clients who come that have what we call inner child issues. Like they may have belief systems of, I can't do this, or I'm not good enough. You know, and that's part of the grey energy they surround themselves with, which is a belief that is just come from emotional events that may have happened earlier in life. And one of the areas I specialize in helping clients clear that. And as they clear that, it's almost like their consciousness is expanding and they realize that they can do something, that there's nothing holding them back except themselves. And it's liberating to be able to expand the consciousness like that. So there's lots of ways we can expand the consciousness and move out of this gray area that's holding everybody back. It's one of the ways of looking at it. It's almost like the world that we're living in at the moment with this gray old grid of consciousness is like being in a boat in the middle of a storm and it's chaotic. And a lot of people look around at all the world events and it can be very frightening of what's going to happen. And they've allowed all this old grid of consciousness to permeate all the way through to the point where it has a big impact on them enjoying life. So one of the things that people can do is they can either choose to remain in this boat rocking about in the storm, and the storm may even get worse, or another part of the sea, if they head towards it, is perfectly calm. And it's completely different. It's almost like it's coexisting at the same time. And one of the ways of being able to move from one area to the other is to learn to expand our consciousness. And there's a lot of things we can do to do that. I mean, for example, this big change that we're going through is part of something that is a plan for humanity to shift them into a different vibrational state. And some people call it the 5D consciousness or the new consciousness. And there's high vibrational energy that's coming down that's affecting everybody, and it's amplifying all the emotions. So if someone's feeling joy, it'll amplify joy by, say, a factor of 10. But if you're feeling anger, it'll amplify anger by a factor of 10. So it's almost like these energies that are coming in is creating this storm for everybody. You know, if someone, for example, finds some of the world events or politicians and they find hatred perhaps by what somebody's doing, it's not actually the politician. The hatred or the anger is a person's own issue just coming to the surface. It's a little bit like a phobia. You know, if we see a spider and we feel fear, then it's not the spider's fault. The spider is just a spider. And we'll continue to feel fear of the spider until we accept that the emotions we feel are our own. And that the outside world is perfect as it is. It's just our perception of the world that's causing us to act as we do. But what we can do, just like the person with the phobia, the fear, you go through and the self-help exercises on the internet, or there's therapists that can help and work through and clear it. And then people can just pick up a spider as they would any other living creature, without having that to fear. And it's the same with a lot of the world events that are happening. Instead of actually letting them trigger us, we can live in a completely different way with them. So that's like addressing our own personal issues. But the other tip I can give everybody, and this is just like the tip of the iceberg of things to do, is the energies that we hold can either be our own, just like the phobia, or we can absorb energies from other people. So I remember a time when I was in corporate and one of my colleagues said, would you like to join the caving club? I said, oh yeah, I'd like to do that. And he said, well, look, if to join the caving club, you have to go down this cave and there's something called a sump. And a sump is a flooded part of the chamber where you go from one side to the other. You have to hold your breath, swim under some rocks, and pop out the other side. And he went into great detail describing how cold it was and how this was a really important test. And I felt quite fearful by it. And I thought, well, no, I'm going to go. I'd like to join the club. But the whole time I was walking down towards the sump, I was feeling an awful lot of fear. And then when, just before we were about to go through the sump, I turned around and I said, oh, where's my colleague who was telling me about the sump? Why isn't he here? He said, oh, he always turns back. He's never, ever been through the sump himself. So I went through the sump, but what I'd been doing is I'd been absorbing all the fear of this other person. And every time he talked about it, it was like an extra bit of fear, and I was actually holding it. So one of the arts of going to this calmer place in your boat is to cut out all the sources of fear, particularly that's coming through mainstream media, social media. Not necessarily stop everything, but certainly cut out anything that is always full of fear. Because we can find out about the news without watching every single event. And it's kind of learning to be much more discerning between what energies you allow in and which energies you choose not to allow in. So, you know, these are just like a couple of very simple things that anybody can do. And we've got a whole series of other suggestions to help people expand the consciousness and move from this chaotic part of the stormy sea into somewhere where the sun shines, the sea is very flat, and you can just enjoy the peace of where you are.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about the first part of the book, because you have lots of evidence there about consciousness and telepathy, near-death experiences and past lives. And there's one thing in there, you talk about dreaming and lucid dreaming and how they did experiments with people who were dreaming. And there was one, it was kind of ESP, where they had somebody in a room sending a picture to somebody who was dreaming in a laboratory.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of people who've done work in this whole area of, I mean, we know what consciousness is, but it's our thoughts that we have. It's all the information we get from our senses, you know, our imagination. We're all familiar with our consciousness there, but the traditional view of consciousness is that it's just the electrical activities in the brain, so therefore consciousness lives in the brain. So we started the book in a very gentle way of saying, well, does consciousness actually exist in the brain, or does it actually exist out of the brain? And the brain is just simply the receiver. You know, a little bit like a TV. You can't say a TV, for example, is the source of all the information that's in there. The information that comes to the TV comes in the air through radio signals, and the TV is just the receiver of it and displays it. And the analogy is that the brain is the receiver of consciousness, and actually consciousness exists outside. So we try to look at some pieces of research that had been done. We try to keep it to peer-reviewed research, particularly by psychiatrists, psychologists, people who had put peer-reviewed information out there. And quite rightly, some of the information was quite fascinating, of telepathy, of being able to communicate to people in lucid dreaming. Lucid dreaming is when people are having a dream, but there's a certain element of being able to change it. And the people were consciously sending thoughts to the lucid dreamers, and they were asked afterwards to see if those thoughts were incorporated in the dreams that they were having, as a way of establishing that, you know, there was a communication of consciousness. So quite fascinating that are out there. But of course, we have a lot of experiences ourselves on a day-to-day basis that support consciousness being outside the body. I mean, for example, if you've ever had that feeling someone's looking at you from behind and you turn around and someone's staring at you, or if you've ever for example, gone into a room where two people have been arguing, and they may not be arguing, but they've left fragments of their consciousness in there, and you can kind of just sense it. And it's like your consciousness that's outside the body is touching on these fragments of consciousness that have occurred through the argument. So there's a lot of examples on a day-to-day basis, you know, things like intuition. We all have intuition. I mean, our little dog is quite often bark when one of us is coming home. And long before they can hear anything, they'll start barking because they know, and they picked up through the extended consciousness, they picked up our consciousness. So this is the sort of thing that happens on a regular basis. So we started off the book looking at some of the cases for this to slowly build up the case of, does consciousness exist outside the body? And then, of course, what comes next is, well, if consciousness can exist outside the body, can it go from one life to the next? And that really reminds me of a story when I first started as a therapist. I was originally trained as a psychotherapist over 5 years. And I asked, what about past lives? Because they hadn't covered it. And this is going back 25, 30 years ago now, where past lives wasn't quite as big as it is now. And the trainer said, well, just think of it as a metaphor. So that was the level of training that I had. And a few weeks later, a client came in and said, I keep having these thoughts about Venice. I'd like to have a past life to see if I'd been in Venice. Oh my goodness, how am I going to do this? So I used hypnosis, and because I'd never been taught really how to do it, I took her to a very deep level of hypnosis. And as it turned out, she was at such a deep level that she wasn't able to remember the events, but I was recording it on a recorder. And it turned out she was a keeper of prostitutes in Venice. Venice was a seaport, had a lot of prostitutes, and her job was to manage the prostitutes. So when I brought her out of the session, she hadn't been able to remember anything. So I gave her the recording. I said, well, look, go off and listen to this. It'll explain why you keep having these thoughts about Venice. And then I bumped into her a couple of weeks later and said, yeah, how did you get on? I said, oh. She said, I'm not happy with you at all. I said, oh, goodness, what's wrong? I'm thinking, oh, maybe I hadn't done a proper recording or something. She said, well, I gathered all of my friends around to listen to this past life, and they all found out I was a keeper of prostitutes in Venice. She said, I'm most upset about that. But it does raise a rather interesting point of this past life wasn't certainly something that, you know, she creatively used her imagination for. It just simply came. And it was probably the last thing she would have preferred for the past life to come through. And when people do experience past lives, this is often how they appear, a complete surprise. And people often experience emotions and also physical sensations. After this event, I thought, well, I've got to get trained in how to work with past lives. And I came across a wonderful trainer called Roger Wolger. And Roger did a lot of work on working with body therapy. And he found that with past lives with very deep trauma, where people have perhaps been killed in torture or shutdowns or other sorts of things like that, there was quite often physical aspects came back into the current life. You know, so for example, someone who had difficulty putting something around their neck being hung in a past life, or someone who had a lot of stomach pains and had a spear that had been thrust into them when they died. So there was a lot of links. And one of the things that amazed me with the work that Roger did is that not only was it extremely powerful, because quite often a lot of these sources of unresolved past lives could be resolved very, very quickly using body therapy, but the level of emotions and body sensations that came through. You know, for example, one of the clients I had a medical problem of having extreme pain in her hands to the point where she couldn't lift up a glass of water. She had to be helped, having her clothes being dressed and things of that nature. And she'd been through the medical profession. They tried everything you could think of, and they couldn't work out what was going wrong. So when I regressed her, she went into a past life of working in an orphanage. She was a young girl looking after the orphans, and there was a fire. She tried to rescue two of the orphans. And as she was trying to pull them to safety, she burnt her hands quite badly, and the orphans died. And in her current life, she had two children, and her ex-husband was trying to take the children away. And it was like triggering this old wound from the past. So I was able to go in and clear that issue for her so that she could live her life normally with her hands as they are. But what this does indicate, though, is that this isn't past lives just being like a metaphor. This is past lives coming through, which is holding the key of why a lot of people have been having difficulty in the current life. Things that weren't complete, the soul has chosen to have other lives in order to work through and to resolve it. So there's a lot of evidence in there that through past lives that people can go from, consciousness can go from one life to the next. And of course, in the area of historical past lives, I know you've done an awful lot of work yourself checking through on that. Rena, my wife, has written a book called Shrouded Truth about biblical times of Jesus. And she didn't go out looking for the clients. There were 8 clients from different parts of the world who came to her either for past life session or maybe a between life session. And it turned out they went into a past life of someone in the biblical time associated with Jesus. Now, for example, one of them was Peter, who was Jesus' brother. And she was able to gather the information about the past life. And she found significant differences between the biblical story of Jesus and these 8 separate past lives, which were all overlapping and supporting each other. And she was a Hindu, so she didn't have any particular beliefs of Christianity or the crucifixion being one thing or the other. So she went through and did a lot of research, and there's a lot of biblical scholars who have gone through finding various old records and things of that nature, and have written books about the biblical time. And she was able to check out the accounts that were differing from the Bible through the similarity with the biblical research. So there's a lot of evidence with that. And because she's a very diligent person, she's professionally trained. Her books have been out for several years now, and there's been absolutely zero skeptic that's come back and challenged it, for the simple reason is that she's so thorough in the work she's done. And it's quite amazing, because Jesus was an incredibly special person, but things and how he worked weren't quite how the Bible portrayed it. So it's quite a fascinating book and definitely worth reading, called Shrouded Truth by Rena Kumar Singham. And Reno, of course, is the co-author of Between Lives, which is what you're talking to me about today.
Hello, this is me, Simon. Did you know that during a past life regression, you can meet with your spirit guide? I conduct past life regression sessions over Zoom, and I've guided many clients to a spiritual encounter with their guide. If you would like to ask me how a session would work for you, you can book a free 20-minute consultation on my website, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The link is in the show notes. So do you often have clients coming back to you after sessions and saying they've done the research and found that past life?
I've had a few. I've had a few people that have written books about it too. One of the books, there was a lovely Norwegian student, and I always remember her because she's one of the hardest people I've ever had of getting into a past life. And I managed it eventually in the end. And she went into a past life of being a young lady in Germany. And she was, I think there was a particular group of them who were fighting the Nazis. And eventually she was caught and executed. And she went through and started to check all the details of that past life. It's quite fascinating. Another one of my graduates went into the past life of Tchaikovsky, the music, Russian music composer, and they've written a book about that. I mean, I've not seen how much work they've done with these books to check it against the historical records. But you know, one of the things, this is a very general comment, is one of the things a lot of skeptics do is they like to browse through the book, and if they see any small thing that's incorrect compared with their understanding of history, they say, well, look, there you go. It can possibly have lived or had that as a past life because this area is an inaccuracy. Which raises a rather an interesting question of how many of us can remember our earlier current life and get all the names of our friends correct, all the locations of where we were when we were doing things. You know, a skeptic could look at that and said, oh, well, you've never been born. You couldn't possibly have had an earlier life. And the other argument about that is a lot of early history is really based on hearsay and it's constantly evolving. And just because history at the moment suggests certain things, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's always the case. I mean, just take the name of someone, for example. In the case of Jesus, very few people in Rena's book addressed him as Jesus. He was called brother, father, son, and there was a few other names he was referred to. So she had to work quite extensively to find out which was the most commonly used term. I mean, obviously things like brother and father were interesting, but she needed to get the absolutely the name of the person. I mean, sometimes clients, when they're in past life, will spontaneously give the information. But if you start pushing for it and you're doing historical information, the danger is that clients may start offering information without it coming through very spontaneously.
So you talk about children with past life memories, which can be really powerful and have such detail confirmed.
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, they are amazing stories. And how it seems to work is that this memory block that we have of the spirit realms and past lives slowly, like the veil of amnesia, slowly gets closed as we get older. So up to the age of 5 or perhaps 7, children quite often can connect and tune into their past lives quite easily. They suddenly start talking about it. They're talking about their other self. There's been an awful lot of research in this area. It started with someone called Ian Stevenson, who did a lot of work with accounts of children in Asia and India and other parts of the world. And it was he's a professor of parapsychology at the University of Virginia. And so psychiatrist Tucker took over the work of Ian Stevenson and did a lot of work with children from America. I remember just one particular account, this young child all of a sudden started to lift up his arms and snap them shut and say, "Action!" and started to go through the throngs as if he was involved in a film. And his parents just couldn't understand it. And they probed and did research and went back into the early days of Hollywood. And one of Jim Tucker's books is all about the whole story of how he finally managed to connect with the person. And he recognized him as soon as the picture was shown of this person who was an extra in some of the Hollywood movies. And was able to describe all sorts of details that happened to him. And this isn't uncommon. Carol Bowman, for example, has written a book, Children's Past Lives, which is full of lovely stories of children who have had near-death experiences, past life experiences that have come through spontaneously, and how parents have recorded it. And it's enriched them and it's enriched the children. Sometimes children are told to shut up because parents are a bit frightened about it, particularly in other cultures where in India, some parents were a bit frightened that if they were reincarnation of another family, that if they went to see that family, that family may demand their child back and say, "Oh, well, it's our child, it's been reincarnated." So sometimes there's a lot of resistance from parents. But between Tucker and Stevenson, they've recorded, for about 10,000 cases of children's past lives. And the thing is, with skeptics, you really got to say, how many cases have you got to have before you can start to open your mind and say, "Yeah, this is a possibility"? If someone's got a closed mind, you can come back millions and they'll still have a closed mind. But I think if people approach it from a very rational perspective, then it makes an awful lot of sense in people's lives. And if they start to work with them and clear them, then it expands their consciousness and it helps them move forward in a very positive way in their lives.
There's a phenomena of children with past life memories also having birthmarks and birth deformities. And is it something in your book? There were 10 different subjects in a deep trance and they were asked about this.
Yes, that's right. Well, I have another book out, which was written before Between Lives, and it's called Exploring the Eternal Soul. And with Exploring the Eternal Soul, it took 15 people who had come for between life spiritual regression, in other words, to explore the soul memories between lives. And it was their stories of all the events that happened. And also, after the event, we went back some time later to find out in the positive changes it had on them. But that was one part of the book. The second part of the book was research that had been inspired by my co-researcher at the time, a lovely researcher into the afterlife called Ian Lawton. And it was his idea to ask a whole series of questions. And unlike a lot of other channel books where you may get one evolved spirits of light answering questions, you're never really sure who that spirit of light is, who they've connected to. And also, it still isn't the end of the day, just one spirit of light's view. So we took the view that we knew that in a between life regression, that the most evolved spirits of light that are encountered by souls are called elders or wise ones, or they've got various other names, but they're involved in the final stages of planning. And often they plan a whole series of lives to help the evolution of the soul. And they've gone beyond the point of needing to reincarnate. So we came up with a way where we could take people who'd had particularly good and very deep between life sessions and quickly connect them with these spirits of light, these groups of elders or wise ones or whatever, and then ask them a whole series of structured questions and do it with 10 different clients. So that way we could get 10 different answers which should be consistent, or if there were differences, we could probe and understand why. And we knew what the source was, so it would be quite reliable information we could get. And we asked a whole series of questions, all the way ranging from unusual soul activities through to the nature of time, the biggest problem facing humanity, and just about everything we could think of. But one of the questions that was asked, and we'd always been very intrigued by this, is why do some souls choose to bring birthmarks or physical marks into their current life? Because not all people do. You know, they may be able to bring back the emotions that happen on and it gets triggered, and then they eventually have to go through and work through and clear it. Or as I mentioned before, sometimes these unexplainable pains from past lives will come through. But this is a little different than people that come through with physical deformation. You know, for example, if someone had been killed, perhaps because a bullet had gone through one hand and out of the other side of the hand, they were born with like a small hole where the bullet entered in one hand and a big mark on the other hand where the bullet had exited. And yet the past life had been verified through Stevenson and Tucker in their normal way. So we knew, or certainly their work suggested, that some souls chose to have these physical marks. So we were rather intrigued to know why should some souls choose to do it and not all souls? And their answer back was that they encourage souls not to do it because it's not needed. But some souls are very eager to come back, and they're very eager to work through the life lesson. And they think that by having the physical mark, it'll help trigger the old memories of the past life, and it'd be easier for them to work through the issue. So they choose to do it. So the spirits of light said, well, if they choose to do it, they can do it. But it's not something they advise, which I found was quite an interesting aspect. So, but of course, you know, this is another area where people are bringing back marks or physical deformities from a past life that relate to a past life that's been established and proved to be valid. But the other aspect of unusual past life experiences are people that are able to speak in a different language in the past life. And of course, this is quite amazing that if someone as a client can suddenly start talking in the language of their past life rather than their normal language, then it just seems to be quite a fascinating area. But it happens very, very infrequently. And I give an example in the book. A colleague of mine had a client who came and said, I've got a friend in Russia and I don't know how to speak Russian. I don't know how to read Russian, but I'd like to do some basic communication with my friend in Russian. Can you take me into a past life where I lived in Russia so that I can start to learn the language of Russian? So my colleague said, oh, okay, I've never done this before, but I'll try it. So we went into a past life. It's a very mundane past life, but the therapist dwelt on the conversations that were occurring, and the client started to speak in Russian with a bit of encouragement as he was recording the conversations that were occurring. And he was brought out, and there were one or two words he started to become familiar with Russian, and asked for another session to do more work in that area. He came back, went into another past life of being a Russian, and more words came through. And eventually he was able to start talking in basic Russian. He couldn't read or write, but he was quite happy that he could communicate a bit in Russian. So it does happen. There's a friend of a colleague of mine in India that claims that she worked out a technique of how to make this rather unusual phenomenon happen more frequently. I never actually tried to do it, but she said that it's quite hard to get clients to talk the language that they're in. But if they start to sing a song, or if there's a part of the past life where they do actually sing, and you encourage them to sing the song in the words of the song, it's a lot easier for them to start to do that in the language that they're not familiar with. But I've never tried that. It's not my interest in past lives has always been from a therapeutic perspective. So I'd be much more interested in how do people resolve their current issues rather than some of these interesting, but for me, not areas I wanted to focus on.
Does it really matter if the past lives are real, if people are getting great healing from them?
Well, that's a very good point. And whenever clients come to me for therapy, if they I've got more of a materialistic view about life, I would say, well, just allow whatever comes through to come through. It may be coming from you. I mean, as a therapist, all I'll be doing is asking questions such as what happens next, what's communicated to you, and so on. So the story will just emerge from you. But it's a story that, if allowed to emerge, and a transformation is done with the story, it brings a great positive result in the current life. And then afterwards, you can form your own view about whether it's real or not. So you're quite right, from a therapeutic perspective, it really doesn't matter one way or the other.
We've been talking about the book. It's called Between Lives, Past Life Regression, Near-Death Experiences, and the Evolution of Consciousness. And people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Yes. I mean, they can get it on any of the internet bookshops or the main bookshops. We will be doing a book signing in Watkins Books in London. We're so pleased that, I mean, this is the largest mind, body, spirit bookshop in the UK. And they've been kind enough to allow us to do a book signing in August. But the book will be available in electronic form on the 13th of May. In the US, it'll also be available in hard copy or soft copy. And then in Europe, the paper copy will be available in the 17th of June. So it's just simply that the US, because this is a US-based publisher that we work with, lead in the US and then follow through in Europe and Asia and the parts of the world.
And could you quickly give us the titles of the other books you guys have written?
Yeah, the two books that we mentioned, Reena Kumarasingham had the book called Shrouded Truth. She does have two other books in the series, but that's probably the best one to start with. And then the other two books that she's written about past lives are referred to in the book. And the book that I've written about between life regression that we talked about is called Exploring the Eternal Soul. And they all go together really in a way as a series. So if you like any of our work that we do, then you can move from one book to the other. And we cover things in a different way. Reena's book is about historical past lives. Mine is much more about the between life and these advice from spiritual beings. And then the between lives, ways of helping people move to expand their consciousness and to live a completely different life on the planet.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. It's been fascinating.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. And thank you also to all the listeners. And I hope that I've been able to share with you things that have helped to you. I'm excited by this whole thing, and hopefully you can join the excitement that Reena and I have, and I feel our energies in all the work we've talked to you about. Okay, bye everybody.
This week I was talking to Andy Tomlinson about the book he co-wrote with Reena Kumarasingham. It's called Between Lives, Past Life Regression, Near-Death Experiences, and the Evolution of Consciousness. If you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you can sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $6 a month, you get an extended episode every week. For $3 a month, you get an extended episode every month. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife, or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And please check out my book. It's called Verified Near-Death Experiences, and it's on Amazon, and you can find it in other bookshops. And there is an Our Paranormal Afterlife Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.